on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Thanks to the fantastic Jenny Green. Back tomorrow at 3 with Pictionary, the hometown takeover, and as always, the best tunes. It's Thursday, the 15th of October, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, we've the latest on COVID cases in Wexford and at Shamrock Rovers as Jack Byrne and Moore set to miss League of Ireland decider.
He might be the Bull Hayes' better looking brother, but at the Exeter Chiefs, he's a legend in his own right. Tom Hayes is with us to preview the Champions Cup final.
Plus, we've Ireland's Áine O'Gorman on Soccer Sisters, equal pay and goal droughts.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM, and we really would love to hear from you, Marie. We've heard the news there, but there's bigger news in sport, isn't it? And it's all COVID related.
Yeah, it's actually just less than 2 days till the return of inter-county Gaelic games. And with the new restrictions, it feels like the spotlight has really focused today on whether or not they should go ahead, with many people coming out and airing their concerns, and also several people coming out and supporting that. And by people, I mean players, managers, people who are set to be involved in the games. Now, RTÉ Sports GAA reporter Damien Lawler joins us now to go through some of this. But Damien, before we get into how significant the discussions have been today, let's start with Wexford, because that is something that we do know for definite. There are cases there, 6 positive cases between their senior football and hurling panels.
Yeah, that's right, Marie. The results just came back there this afternoon, and out of 54 tests with the hurling squad, 2 have come back positive. The rest are negative. And as you mentioned, there are 4 positive tests with the senior footballers as well. Of course, there was a cluster well known in that county for the recent few days. So actually what that does there, with the rapid testing scheme that the GAA have brought in, answers back nearly within 24 hours, which is very impressive. And it means now that the county can plan ahead, and the players affected isolate for the next 10 to 14 days. And the footballers have a 26-man squad to play Limerick this weekend. And the hurlers take on Galway October the 31st in Croke Park. That gives them 16 days. So hopefully the 2 players who test the positive will be back in. The show can continue to keep on the road in Wexford. From now, the under-20 hurling preparations are put to one side. But for this weekend, there's a 26-man squad ready. And I suppose it's the first example, Marie, of the rapid testing system that the GAA have brought in for inter-county level coming into force and working very well, it has to be said.
Absolutely. Well, I think when the cases are low, then you can move players in and about. But it's if there's a situation where they are high, then it will have worked. But there will be a lot of more discussions to be had. Now, I did mention at the top of the show, Damien, that there was a lot of people coming out today sharing their opinion on the Inter-County Championship. We'd Westmeath footballer John Heslin last night asking whether players' safety has been considered when with the return to play. Eddie Brennan, the Leash manager, said he felt it was a bit reckless for Inter-County to return. But then our man Stephen Campbell said that he felt safe. So it's quite a mixed view. But let's first of all hear from Leash manager and, of course, former Kilkenny player Eddie Brennan.
I suppose I'm at the coalface. I understand the categorisation of elite athletes and that. So look, don't get me wrong, Brian, I'd love this to happen. But I suppose the question is, you know, are we being maybe a tiny bit reckless here?
And as a manager preparing in 2 weeks to bring your team to Croke Park, are you concerned that you could be putting those players at risk, their families at risk, their communities at risk?
Yeah, look, I think it's something that I don't think you're definitely not going to, you know, force any player to, you know, partake in something that they're not completely happy with, because at the end of the day, look, everybody has a family to go home to. Everybody has their lives to live off the field. And at the end of the day, look, we love the GAA. We love hurling and football and camogie and everything else that goes with it. But at the same time, look, we have to see what the bigger picture is here and make sure that we're doing the right thing.
Now, that's Eddie Brennan, and he was speaking to the news at 1 a little bit earlier. Now, we're also joined on the line by former Kerry footballer Darren O'Sullivan. Look, Darren, I know you've been quite vocal on social media about your thoughts on the championship, and that is that it shouldn't go ahead.
Yeah, I suppose. Look, I suppose I'm saying it from both points of view. I can. I actually genuinely don't believe it's an argument anyone can win. People are either for it or against it. I suppose being a football fan and a GAA man, you obviously want to see it going ahead, but I just with the restrictions that are out there for everybody, I can't see sense in how you're expecting lads to, I suppose, put themselves at risk. And some people have said they're willing to take the risk. But I think if you were to look at it on a bigger scale, it's more than just the players. It is their families. It is their work colleagues as well. So I was looking at it from a point of view, if I was working in a bank or wherever I was, and one of my colleagues went off up to, let's say, like Kerry now, up to Monaghan the weekend, playing above there, travelling up and travelling down, would I feel safe him or her coming into work the next day? And I had to just, like, my honest opinion is no. It's even the elite sports now is a term thrown around by a lot of people, and I honestly believe it's the same people that, if you told them that the Gaelic players were going to start getting paid and be professional, they'd be the first people to be saying no, they're not elite. So I think there's a bit of double standards.
I think you're right, Darren. There is no right or wrong answer. You know, there is obviously player safety has to come into it. But then on the other side of it as well, seeing Gaelic games does give the whole country a benefit. And it's kind of something that I think you could argue over and back. But I think what it does come down to is the players. And the GPA came out today and said that they were going to survey their players about whether or not they felt safe, because that's the nub of it. The players have to feel safe, and the GAA have to try and do their best to make them safe. And obviously that's really hard to do when we don't know what is coming down the track. Damien, when can we expect to hear the results of this survey?
Tomorrow afternoon, Marie, and I think the GPA left it this late to complete this canvas because they say they want to have all the latest updated information, and that the situation this week was completely different to the situation last week. So they've been planning to do this. You know, in terms of what it is, it's a canvas of players' opinions. And Darren mentioned earlier in the day that a lot of players would be reluctant to pull out because of the COVID situation, and that maybe, I suppose, their stance might be remembered in the future. Now, I wouldn't like to think that would be the case. I would like to think any county board would be strong enough to completely empathise with a player in this situation. And if a manager wasn't feeling that way, well, it's up to the county board to enforce that. But this is a very emotive issue. Again, like Darren said, you're either for it or against the guys. And I think the events of maybe the last couple of weeks, maybe where county final celebrations have been maybe magnified and put in the public domain and rightly criticised, well, they've done a lot of damage, really. But I think in terms of the restrictions that are out there at the moment, just even yesterday, the DUP the leader, Arlene Foster, the First Minister of Northern Ireland, exempted the GEA and inter-county GEA from the restrictions that are in place there. So it's expected the same exemption will be sought down south. And the GEA will be leading by the advice given to them by INFIT. And up to this point, really, even though there's a risk involved in everything, thousands of club games have gone ahead and no case has been directly linked back to events on the field. The rapid testing is now in place, sort of try to put in a safety blanket there as well. When they organised the cool camps, there was one case from 71,000 children participating, and that case wasn't directly linked back as well. Every time you go to a GAA match, and Darren will know this as a player, or as a coach, as a mentor, the health questionnaire has to be completed, I suppose, several times a week. And I think really the GAA was getting praised just a few weeks ago for putting the life and soul back into the community. Obviously, numbers have risen high, trends are high, emotions are high. And we saw from maybe after county final celebrations, clubs letting players, the association down. It's understandable that if you hadn't won a county title, you go and celebrate it. Get into the public domain in this pandemic, it's not going to go down well. So I think you're either for or against at this stage, but I think the GAA stance hasn't changed, really. They've been all the time being guided by INFIT. I would feel that the government want this championship to go ahead. They want people to have a lift or a morale booster during the winter. And I suppose we wait and see what comes out the next few weeks. But as for now, I think the plan is to go ahead with things.
Darren, just on that point, like, no player is ever going to say no for playing for their county. The emotional drive, the honour of it. But do players need to be protected here? And is it time for the likes of the GPA to step up and really be their voice in a moment like this?
Yeah, well, I think you're right there. No player's going to say no. I think everyone works so hard to get to this point in their career that they can go out and represent their county. So it's an awkward one, and I do feel it is something that has to be taken out of the players' hands as well, because players will go out and play. They'll go play injured. They'll go play if there is danger. Do you know that kind of way? Everyone just wants to play.
we're the same, whether you're playing for Kerry or playing for your club, you just want to play. My argument is, and it has been from the start, is you're asking people to restrict their movements, restrict their inner circle, don't go here, don't go there. And then I'm just going to look from a Kerry point of view now, because it's on my doorstep, and they're travelling up to Monaghan individually in cars, playing a game. There's a lot of uncontrollables in a match. You don't know how it's going to go. You're in a dressing room, which the clubs weren't allowed to do, which is in a confined space of 30-odd people. Sure, you all know how tired physically and mentally you would be after a game. Then having to drive down on your own from Monaghan to Kerry, probably have to stop once or twice, probably for a pit stop into a petrol station, get diesel, get a coffee. It's all the smaller things. Genuinely, the playing the match isn't the big issue for me. It's the, everything that goes with it, travelling to and from. I just think it's very tough on players to be put in that position.
Well, that does paint, I have to say, a very bleak picture. The thoughts of the players having to drive up on a 6 or 7 hour round trip by themselves, it does make you wonder why. But then the other side of that is, we had Stephen Lucy on last night, and he's a GP, and you know, he said like the GAA gives something to look forward to, it gives a purpose, it gives a pastime, it's what people live for. And you know, he asked everybody to think of the older people in their community, the older people that they know, how everybody looks forward to it, and how much it gives back. But it's just impossible to find that balance and to marry the two. And Leitrim GAA chairman Enda Stenson was speaking to the 6-1 News a little bit earlier, and he said he's huge concerns over his players lining out in matches, that he has four teams heading out around to different counties this weekend, and if anybody gets COVID, that he'll be devastated, or if anybody passes it on. Let's hear from him.
All I can say, Eileen, sorry, I don't want to cut across you, but this weekend Leitrim CA will be going to play in Uri. I know that our senior ladies team have a challenge somewhere else. Our minors have a discussion somewhere. Our senior hurlers are heading to Beacon for a hurling final on Sunday. That's four teams leaving Leitrim to play in different parts. Chris, across you in the country, I cannot visit my neighbour because I can't go into their house. I'm not sure how the government can square that. That doesn't seem to add up, and that has huge reservations with a lot of people that have spoken to me in the last 2 days.
In a sense, and the Leitrim chairman there. A little bit earlier as well, Damien, Mike Quirk, the Leitrim manager, proposed perhaps games being played in neutral venues to cut out the long travel and to cut out those scenarios that Darren described there of players travelling for hours and hours in the car by themselves.
Yeah. Oh, Damien. I'd go along with that, Marie. Sorry, I beg your pardon. I thought you were playing audio. I'd 100% go along with that, Marie. I think it's definitely something that could be looked at. Now, it was brought up by one of the county board chairmen at a meeting last week, and the answer given then by the officials was that it would affect the integrity of the Allianz League if you had some games at neutral venues, whereas previous games had taken place at home or away venues, and that maybe it could leave them open to a technicality in terms of the integrity of the competition. Now, what I'd say about that is, ever since COVID hit, the integrity of everything has been hit. And I would feel too that, like, the scenario Darren paints is a bleak one, there's no doubt about that. And all the protocols that have been put in place and all the ones that have been taken, if you could arrange a neutral venue close to both teams or somewhere in the middle, I think it would be a great help. Even from just a kind of, I suppose, a player's mentality point of view. So that's definitely one area that could be looked at again. This home and away thing, particularly this weekend, whereby you do have four or five counties travelling up north, Marie, and they're playing games up there, maybe in the COVID hotspots. Now, I'm looking at the figures for today. We've 1,200 positive cases here in the Republic. So I think nearly the whole country is a positive hotspot at this stage. And I know that's a very general thing to say. I say that lightly too. So the point I'm making is, certainly on the weekend we go back, where four or five teams have to travel big distances up north particularly, maybe they could have looked at playing it at a neutral venue, but they gave their reasons.
Speaking of integrity of competitions, it was also announced today that Offaly Camogie, a member of their management team, has COVID-19, and a number of their players are self-isolating due to unrelated cases. And they've had to give Cork a walkover this weekend. Emma Duffy joins us from the 42. Emma, look, we have spoken quite a number of times about integrities of competitions, and when you see teams having to give a walkover, it does raise a lot of questions about the validity of these competitions.
Yeah, absolutely, Marie. You obviously mentioned Offaly there. a member of the management team has been diagnosed with COVID-19, and as you say, players are self-isolating due to a separate case. But I know in Cavan as well, they were supposed to have an Ulster semi-final on Friday, and that's been postponed due to unavailability of a number of Cavan players due to COVID. So look, it started at inter-county level. I think it's something we're going to see week on week. As the two lads have mentioned, I suppose we're all kind of conflicted at the minute as GA fans, people who work in it, people who have played. We get the argument that it can give the country a lift and it brings great joy to everyone. But you obviously have to think of the players, their families. They're not in a pro bubble where they're rigorously tested, so they have to go into work on a Monday. So you just have to look at all the knock-on effects. Obviously, conflicted is the big thing, but I do think we're going to see plenty of postponements. I suppose Offaly and Cavan, they're not isolated incidents. That's going to be happening week on week for the next while.
And what about the rapid testing? Do Camogie teams and ladies football teams have access to that, Emma?
I'm not entirely sure, Marie. I'd imagine it's kind of a united go at it, as ladies football and Camogie have rode in behind the GA through the whole thing. All their statements have come together. All the decisions have been made together. So I'd imagine there is some kind of unity in that part, but obviously it's just not at the level that we're seeing at professional sports, even elite level like League of Ireland and that kind of thing. I'm not sure we're going to see the exact same at inter-county, so it does raise many questions.
And what about the rest of Offaly's fixtures?
Yeah, I'm not too sure. I actually was reading a few things on Twitter there that I suppose the first thing that Cork came out with was that Offaly couldn't field. So people obviously assumed it was to do with COVID, but I think there's other questions being raised now that it could be a player availability thing in general. Do they have enough to field their other fixtures? So I suppose it's just a matter of waiting and seeing. But all we know is this, again, they're not fielding against Cork, and Cork have the walkover, which is kind of disappointing for them as well, because they've had an up and down few weeks, and I'm sure they just want to go out and do their talking on the field. But look, that's the times we're living in now, and it's something that we just have to get used to, I think.
And Damien, just from the point of view of the GAA, are we expecting any statement from them, or is it just a case that the games are going ahead and, you know, discussions can go on around that, and we're just going to have to wait and see what happens with the GPA statement and any other teams that might be affected by COVID?
Yeah, Marie, I mean, my preliminary information is that the response from the GPA players could be positive, and that a lot of players will want to play in that game or play in this year's championship. On Taunus de Leo Vrecker has just said that the GAA championships won't go ahead if we reach level 5. So then at that stage, the decision will be taken out of everybody's hands. Right now, I suppose we have to try and see how far the GAA can go with being exempt from the restrictions. And once they're exempt, and once ENFIT have given the green light for this to go ahead, well, then they continue as normal. But I think, are they doing all they can to ensure the protocols are there to try and stop the virus being spread in GAA activity? Absolutely. Can they control what happens after games? Not so much in terms of club games, but in inter-county games, there would be a much better chance of doing that, particularly where there's no silverware at play. But at the end of the day, I think that they'll take their lead from the medical experts, and for now, the exemption is there for sport at that level to continue.
And Damien, just on that Leo Varadkar comment, is that new information? Because, you know, Elite Sport, it was expected that it would continue in level 5.
Yeah, you know, the Taunushir Smedy's comment there on a different radio show, actually, that if the country goes to level 5, the championships would not take place. So that's new information as well, yeah.
Okay, well, it is evolving all the time. And Darren, just before we do finish up, look, there are matches going ahead as far as we are concerned anyway. And Kerry do have to travel to Monaghan. And look, whether we like it or not, we're going to get excited about it. We can't help it. It's in our DNA to look forward to the GAA, and it's impossible not to look forward to this match.
Yeah, well, look, at the end of the day, whether I think it should or shouldn't happen, I'll be watching. So I'm kind of way, I'm not gonna be boycotting any games like everyone else. I'll be glued to all the games that are on TV or streamed or whatever. So, I get the argument. It'll give everyone a lift. We all want to be watching it. But I suppose I'm just trying to look at it from all the other point of view. And like Emma said, the knock-on effect to all of these people moving around. But like that, look, at the end of the day, the championships around the corner will be glued to it. It'll be interesting like that. It's hard to know what teams are like at the moment, how their form is, you know, who's had good championships, who hasn't, who's who's maybe made the most of the time away and who hasn't. So it'll be interesting like that. It's going to be, look, if it goes ahead, it'll be a very strange championship. I think there'll be a couple of strange results, so it'll be exciting anyway.
Emma, it's so sad, really, isn't it? When you want to chat about it, the championship getting back up and running, but that we're mainly chatting about stuff like this.
Yeah, absolutely, Donegal, I agree. And I suppose even just at ladies football and Camogie in general, I suppose there's been plenty of negative coverage over the last few days and weeks with the dual clashes and whatnot. They've been well documented at this stage. I think Cork players are making quite a bit of noise about it. And Hannah Looney actually said it yesterday herself. You know, it's so disappointing to be going into a weekend of championship at such a low, like, you know, it's all just kind of negative stuff, whether it be dual clashes or COVID precautions and different things like that. So it is very sad, but look, as Darren said there, we'll make do with what we've got. We'll be sure to be tuning into everything, whether we agree with it or not. And look, hopefully it will, as we say, give the country a lift in these tough times.
Darren, I know we're going back over it a bit, but sometimes it gets muddied a bit with elite. And I think we need to separate sometimes to kind of amateur and professional. And we've seen professional teams, our soccer team, they couldn't keep it at bay. Do you think it's a step too far to ask amateurs to live up to those type of protocols?
Yeah, well, I suppose that's probably one of the things that kind of got at me first, you know, is there, like, I suppose for a lot of people calling the GA and the Inter-County Elite now because it suits them and they want to be watching something because there's not very much else up there. Whereas, like, realistically, I think if in the morning they said, look, we're going to start paying the Inter-County players, they're part of the uproar over it. But like that, you've seen how much of a struggle it is for the soccer, the rugby, you know, the bodies with probably a lot more funds and, you know, a lot more at their disposal than the GA. So, like, that was the big thing for me. I just found that it was going to be, if the professional bodies couldn't keep it at bay, how are the GA going to do it? And, you know, even the small team there, like, a lot of the boys would have played football during the summer with the club and could go to the dressing room. And then a week later, because they're in with Kerry, they're back into a dressing room. It just, Darren, just like you said, muddied.
How are the players feeling, the ones that you know? Because you'd obviously be still close to quite a lot of them.
Do you know what? I was chatting to quite a few of them actually this week, just saying, look, best of luck for the next couple of weeks. I didn't go into how they felt about it, because I suppose I'm writing for a local paper down here and they know I've done a few radio things that might be a bit shy about.
Donegan knows all about that.
When you're out, you're out.
The door slammed behind me. But I literally rang a few of them this week. I chatted a few of them. I just said, look, best of luck for the next couple of weeks. Stay safe. Safe drive, stuff like that. I just wouldn't feel comfortable trying to pick their brains. But look, like, they're athletes. They want to play for sport. They want to get out there. They want to play. They want to play against full strength teams all over the country. So, like that, they'll want to play. But there has to be a bit of worry there at the same time.
Okay, well, Darren and Emma, thanks so much for joining us. Very interesting to hear your views. And the world is full of contradictions, especially now. On 2FM. Now, welcome back. We are going to turn our attention to football news, but we are staying with COVID because Tony O'Donoghue joins us now on the line with some news of a couple of positive cases in a League of Ireland club. Tony.
Yes, it's Shamrock Rovers, the champions in waiting, you might say, the champions elect. They've got four games left and they need 4 points in their four matches. None of those against anybody else in the top four. So tomorrow they're due to play at home to Derry City. And that game now must be considerably in doubt, you'd have to say, because, you know, they've had Aaron Green, then they've named him, and Jack Byrne. Now, I mentioned when the news emerged of a second Irish positive player that it was convention that we didn't name the player, and he hasn't been named in public until now, but Shamrock Rovers have named him. Jack Byrne's COVID test came while on international duty with the Republic of Ireland, which is why he didn't travel to Finland. And so he's self-isolating and thankfully asymptomatic, and hopefully we wish him well and that he'll recover very soon. And of course the same to Aaron Green. And there's form in this regard because St. Pat's had a game against Dundalk called off because one player had tested positive. Galway United had a game called off as well for a similar situation. So it's going to mess up the run, and you'd have to say Shamrock Rovers, as I say, are due to play tomorrow They're then due to play on Monday up in Finn Harps, which the northwest of the country is a COVID hotspot at the moment. And then tomorrow week, they're at home to St. Pat's. The final games of the season has already been moved out a week. They're all going to be played on Sunday, the 8th of November. But if their games are to be called off tomorrow and Monday, it's going to give the fixtures computer a terrible headache. And I think now of the late Michael Hayes. Recently we lost him, an FAI stalwart, who used to organise all the stuff behind the scenes in the FAI, all the fixtures, and was aware. He had the rule book and knew everything about what to do in these situations. This is, of course, an unprecedented situation in terms of COVID and its effect on life and effect on sport. So we don't know yet what the competitions director of the FAI is going to do. We're expecting news on that any minute, because obviously their game tomorrow is due to be live on television as well, and we'd like to know before rolling the outside broadcast unit up to Talla. But yeah, it's terrible for Aaron Green and for Jack Byrne, and there's several other players who were deemed to have been close contacts as well. So I think Rovers probably would prefer that the games were called off. Not alone do they have the COVID casualties, but Graham Burke is suspended. Neil Ferrugia came back injured from the under-21 duty. And Pico Lopez is injured as well. Greg Bolger's out as well. So they do have something of an injury crisis in Talla. But as I say, they've named the player Aaron Green, who's returned a positive COVID-19 test following a test on Monday. And they've also named Jack Byrne, who had his COVID positive on Sunday with the Republic of Ireland.
Tony, we didn't name him. You didn't name him when we were on last, so we didn't really get to talk about Jack Byrne. But really unfortunate timing for him. I know you can't help when you get sick, but to miss out on the Republic of Ireland game and now potentially miss out on a couple of Shamrock Rovers games as well if they go ahead.
Well, a lot of people were saying that, you know, Jack Byrne is exactly what this Republic of Ireland team need at the moment. Just that, perhaps in the number 10 position, just that extra creativity and spark. Surprising that even though he was on the bench for the home game on Sunday against Wales, he didn't see any action at all. And I did notice him at the stadium afterwards, just initially doing a warm-up on his own, or a warm-down, I should say, and then he was joined by the other substitutes. It was interesting in an Ireland context, I suppose, that nobody else was deemed a close contact of Jack's when all the rest of them did travel to Finland. And remember, his situation was the one which was a positive with the UEFA test, a negative with the next test that was done, and subsequently a positive with the third test, which is why he couldn't travel with the squad. But yeah, it's desperately unfortunate for Jack. I think he's played well enough against the likes of AC Milan. And when I think of AC Milan now, I think that didn't Zlatan test positive not long after his trip to Talla? But that was quite a few weeks ago. But yeah, Jack has proven himself in you know, stellar company to still have an effect on games. Whether Stephen Kenny thinks he can do as much apart from the creative side, because he wants his midfield three to run and run and run, and wants the high press. But at some stage, I'd certainly like to have seen Jack Byrne, but we won't see him for the next 2 weeks anyway, that's for sure.
Tony, we wish him and Aaron a speedy recovery, but that's kind of personal goals, and you're lucky to do it, to play for your country, a real honour individually, and your club get behind you. But for Shamrock Rovers this year, it's been brilliant, and for him and Aaron to miss out on that now would be massively disappointing after all they've given this season.
Absolutely it would, but you know, Donegal, the news that's coming through this evening, you were just talking there with Damien about it. If the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar says that the championship won't happen if we go to level 5, well, then, you know, the end of the League of Ireland won't happen either, I'd wager. How can it? I mean, the elite sports have been, you know, given something of an exemption. But this is where we are right now. There's only 4 games to go in the league, as I say, for Shamrock Rovers. Some clubs have even less to play. But we do have the quarterfinals of the FAI Cup to come as well. And yeah, as I say, Rovers are champions elect, no question about that, but they still have to win the final points to get over the line. Actually, if Bowes win tomorrow, the gap will be just 2 points, although Rovers will have two games in hand. And they wouldn't like to have to, you know, play all their games with maybe, you know, 48 hours in between them all to try and get them finished. I mean, will we have to see a further extension of the season? Can clubs even afford that? I mean, you know, and different to the GAA situation, every time the season is extended, a club which has effectively no income is going to have to, you know, pay wages and staff wages and player wages. So we're back to where we started from almost, which is very, very sad indeed.
And Tony, just that quote from Leo Varadkar, it's difficult for the GAA because they're amateur players and can't be bubbled and cocooned in a way that Premiership players or provincial rugby players can be. So that was when he was asked about Level 5, meaning no Championship, and he said that it would. And look, Tony, there's no mention of the League of Ireland there. A little bit of hope.
Yeah, and I have to give the League of Ireland clubs, at any of them that I've been at, and I've been at quite a few, be it their training grounds, or be it at the stadia, they have been superb in the way that they've adapted the guidelines and the protocols. In every club, it's been very, very thorough, and they can't be blamed for any COVID outbreak. As you say, it's just unfortunate. People are getting this virus and are going to get it. And, you know, if you get the virus, that's not your fault. You obviously have to take as many precautions as you can, as sensible precautions. And in my experience, all of the clubs that I've dealt with have been doing that. You know, the contact tracing, temperature checking, hand sanitizing, separation of people, social distancing, etc. And then even when we do interviews, you know, completely different situation than what used to be. You know, you're well away and there's kind of different zones and what have you. So I think they've handled it as best they can. And it's terrible to think that sport is going to be a victim of this virus again.
Yeah, let's hope they have. We know they've put every procedure in place. Maybe lack of relegation could be good for Cork City this year, Tony. We'd take that if it was going. If we could put it
I was watching the game against Dundalk the other night, and I thought they played a lot better. And Colin Healy, you know, I think he set out, first of all, not to lose the game early. And then early in the second half, they grew in confidence. But then a killer blow. I would have to say, and looking at it again and again, that Bossen, the keeper, may have been impeded, interfered with, fouled. Now, maybe that's with my cork-tinted glasses on.
It is completely.
Dundalk probably deserved it overall. But encouraging signs under Colin Healy. But, you know, they need the points on the board and fast.
Absolutely. Tony, as always, thanks so much for joining us on
Cheers,
Game
guys.
On.
Game On Rugby.
Okay, this Saturday we'll see a new club added to the Roll of Honour as Champions of European Rugby when Racing 92 take on the Exeter Chiefs. There will be plenty of Irish interest with 5 of our own involved in both teams, but watching from Limerick is a foundation block in Exeter's success. Tom Hayes captained the Devon club to an elite status and we're delighted he joins us now. Tom, how are you?
Not too bad now, don't you yourself?
I'm great. Tom, it feels like it's come full circle. 10 years ago, you led Exeter to the Premiership in Bristol. They play there this weekend with the ultimate prize, Champions of Europe.
Yeah, it'd be absolutely brilliant, I suppose. Bristol keeps seeming to pop up on the radar for Exeter on huge nights and things like that. So hopefully it might be a good omen for this weekend for the boys to claim a fairly big crown.
Tom, we always chat about the tradition of a club and the history of the club, but you've actually been involved in that from the ground up at Exeter. You might just tell us a bit about your role there and when you first arrived.
Yeah, I joined back in 2008 when the club had only moved a year or two previously into Sandy Park. So they were, for want of a better way of putting it, playing in a mud bet down in the county ground in the middle of town. And Tony Rowe, to his credit, came in as commercial manager, I think, back in the 90s and put a few noses out of joint, it has to be said, with his plans for the club. But he's made his way up along to CEO and chairman and main sponsor of the club. But he put a few noses out of joint in wanting to move the club out of the county ground. So they sold the city centre place and moved out to Sandy Park, where they now play. And from a championship perspective at the time, I was playing for Plymouth Albion when they moved, but everything, all the noises coming out of Exeter was that it was a club that was going places. So I didn't think twice about
jumping on board when the chance came that summer of 2008. They were still making strides at the time, so kind of still a championship outfield, and I suppose at the time was also getting a bit of a reputation for being bridesmaids and never the bride kind of thing, because it finished in the top two or three of the championship for a good few years, but had never quite managed to get over the line. It was always kind of the premiership club that had got relegated just bounced back up again, and that had happened for a few years at that time with Harlequins and Leeds in particular. Northampton went back up, but Leeds had yo-yoed a little bit around that time. So in order to try and break that mould, then Exeter were really trying to become a premiership club in waiting as much as anything, and had done all the right things, I suppose, in fairness as well. So I had built a fairly sustainable business model there, and thankfully into what was, I suppose, a fairly epic year. We were only kind of talking about it, a lot of us, earlier on this year on the anniversary of promotion. It was a fairly epic year for us as individuals, I suppose, in what we managed to do as a group, getting together from our own, all our different backgrounds and everything. So we finally managed to get it over the line and just kind of kick on a little bit over the next few years, which was brilliant.
Tom, we'll chat about Rob Baxter and the brilliant players there, but you mentioned something there. They got the business model right, and Tony Roan deserves an awful lot of credit. If you look at other clubs like Toulon, they spike, they win, you know, they win for a few years and they're gone, whereas Exeter, over the last 10 years, it's slowly been building towards this moment.
Yeah, look, Tony made no secret about it when we got promoted that being one of the kingpins in Europe was his ultimate goal, really. And I was quite taken aback by it. Not necessarily, but impressed by it in some ways anyway. And that I never forgot it when he was saying it. And he wasn't shy about saying it in the press or anything like that as well. So for a club that was a championship club that got promoted and everybody was expecting us to get relegated, for our CEO to kind of come out and say that when we hadn't even managed to establish ourselves as a premiership club alone at that stage, not to mind potential European kingpins, it was impressive to say the least, like for him to come out and say that. And like I was saying earlier on, he's put some noses out of joint some ways back along the line in terms of what he wants to do with the club, but in fairness to him, he's had his vision that he's driven on.
Tom, I have a brilliant memory of the European Cup when we won in 2006, and it wasn't of the game, but it's walking down the tunnel and I saw Dominic Crotty, who had set the blaze for us, set a really high standard, and he was bawling his eyes out crying. Just for you this weekend, how big is it for you with Exeter, you know, at the top table?
Oh, look, it's absolutely brilliant. I think particularly even just kind of for the club's own story within the English system, like going back, like Rob Baxter himself played in a couple of promotions from the fourth tier to the third tier and up to the second tier, and he played a lot of years in the second tier over now the championship. It was National One at one point and so on. So just kind of thinking back along the story, I know a lot of people kind of say the Exeter story has been great since they got promoted in 2010, but there's kind of a longer backstory to it than that as well, I suppose, in terms of other fellows that have been involved in kind of driving the club on to where it has been or where it has gotten to, when that's kind of led to other fellas then wanting to be part of it from the outside and driving it on. So it's been absolutely brilliant that way. And I think just to see him do it this weekend on the back of all of that would be absolutely fantastic, I think. Just, and obviously proud to be part of that somewhere back along the line. But obviously it's all over to the boys that are right there right now, I suppose, as well, to try and do it.
It kind of adds to the narrative, though, doesn't it? The difference between Racing and Exeter, and one is so full of glamour and bright lights, and the other one just seems to be built on hard work.
Yeah, it's certainly different, all right, yeah. And I think maybe in some ways people might put Racing as favourites. And look, I don't know, actually know who to make favourites going into it, but Racing are, like, say, some little bit more. I think maybe it's wrong to call them a showbiz team, but they're certainly have a lot more of the leading lights of the game playing on their side of things. So they could really turn it on the game on the day, and you don't really know how Exeter would handle that, I suppose. But what we will know about Exeter is that they'll be completely cohesive in what they will do. They'll be set out a fairly diligent plan, and they have added their own little bit of X factor, which I think has been crucial over the last couple of years, in the likes of Stuart Hogg and Johnny Gray and a few big names, just kind of adding to that real little bit of a
top-end experience added to the likes of Jack Nowell and Henry Slade and those boys that were that probably needed a bit more of a support cast to try and get the team over the line in the really big games. Because even just going back a few years ago, I remember when Exeter drew with Leinster in a Heineken Cup match and then ended up losing the return leg. And you could just kind of sense that they were just given the how much quality, top-end quality Leinster had with all the top-end experience and all the international, the Irish internationals on the Leinster team. It was kind of just maybe that little bit that Exeter were missing in comparison. And they've started to get more of that now, like with the likes of Luke Cowan-Dickey and Jack Nowell and Henry Slade togging out for England fairly regularly. And just then obviously adding the likes of Stuart Hogg and Johnny Gray to it as well. You're getting more fellas with real top-end experience there. So I think that will hopefully stand to Exeter in what will obviously be, I think, a very intense match at the weekend.
But Tom, as a team, they're what we'd call a sum of the parts team, isn't it? Like you mentioned, yeah. Cowan-Dickey there, Jack Nowell, Henry Slade, they're players that finally are being recognised for their performance. But I'd say within the environment, there's an awful lot of that Exeter team would say they're undervalued and not getting enough of a go for higher honours.
Yeah, there probably is a fair thing in that. I think even the two Simmons brothers, I know Rob had mentioned, had spoken publicly, I think, in some interview, whether it was TV or on the paper a while back. There was arguments about whether Sam Simmons should be in the England team ahead of Billy Vunipola, and Rob was kind of making the thing, well, Eddie Jones has obviously decided that Billy Vunipola is the type of number eight that he wants, and obviously Sam and Billy are two very different players. So it isn't really that you can have one in the squad and another one as backup to them, because they're entirely different and you'd end up having to change your game plan and the whole lot. But Sam Simmons is in the conversation for England contention, is I suppose the point I'm trying to make, but he's not quite getting over the line. And I think Joe Simmons, his brother, playing out half and captain for the Chiefs now as well, is kind of getting into the same conversation as to whether he'd be the one pushing George Ford out as a number 10 jersey for England, with Owen Farrell possibly in the 12 jersey or whatever, because he has progressed a huge amount over the last few years. Rob made him team captain at a very young age, and he's just, in order to kind of invest in him and show their trust in him, and he has repaid them, in fairness. So, yeah, it is a kind of a sum of the parts kind of thing, like you say, because there isn't recognition. That's just kind of the two boys out of a lot of players that are there. But I suppose that still kind of plays into, not necessarily a siege mentality outside of things, but it does make fellas kind of realise that Exeter Chiefs matters a huge amount to me, because there isn't anything else going on outside it from a rugby perspective.
Tom, we'd normally ask predictions, but it's wrong to, because I know you'll rule with your heart and always back Exeter, but there's loads of Munster interest this weekend, yourself with Exeter and Dunica, Ryan Zeebo and Mike Prendergast as well. So thanks so much for joining us. Let's hope for a brilliant match at the weekend, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Not a bother. Thanks a million. Thanks for having me on.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. The path towards qualifying for the 2022 Women's European Championships continues next week for the Republic of Ireland when they travel to Ukraine. Anya Gorman joins us now. Anya, we are going to get into how preparations are going shortly. But first of all, I want your thoughts on last night, and in particular, just how you think Ireland are doing in general under Stephen Kenny.
Yeah, I think the performances have obviously been really good. Like, we've owned the ball, played like a good brand of football, a passing game. It's just in that final third, it's just, I think, getting the goals off the mark and not just trying to rely on set pieces. I think it's probably been quite frustrating for the lads. But look, like, the next Robbie Keane's not just going to appear out of nowhere, and there's obviously some really, really good players in the team and really good young players, Aaron Connolly, Adam Ede, that have been doing really well as well. So I think once they hit the back of the net for the first time, I think it will just take off from there.
Anya, we keep saying that everyone needs to have patience, and as sports fans that is difficult, okay, but as players, is it hard to have patience when you're in a setup?
Like, I think they'll obviously be frustrated that they have get some good results and that the performance is deserved, and I think it's obviously more disappointing when you come off and you put in a performance, and like last night, obviously giving away the goal and the nature, the way they conceded at the back as well, we'll be disappointed, because it was good performance apart from that, and they did. And the thing is, you're creating chances, so you have to keep looking at that as a positive. And It's just that's why you paid the big money, I suppose, for the strikers in the world, just getting someone to put the ball in the back of the net.
Only enough about that. How we fix for the big game next Friday, the Ukraine?
Yeah, really looking forward to it. Obviously, it's a big game for us, obviously, in our quest to qualify for the first European Championship. So I think, obviously, we had a tough game against Germany last month, but it was good preparation for us all to get back in after the break for the period during COVID. So, look, we're all just really looking forward to it, and I think it's a really exciting time for women's football.
And Anna, you've beaten them before, which helps, and obviously that was at the start of your Pau's tenure. So how have you came on since then?
Yeah, I think obviously that was a great performance that night. I was in studio in RTE, and I think like Colin obviously brought professionalism to the game, but I think Vera's personality is quite infectious, and she breeds the confidence, like an attacking style of football, and to get at the teams and get results and get goals. And I think we'll obviously learn from the way that we can see the goals that night, but show great character to come back and get the 3 points. So going out to Ukraine, we're full of confidence.
And some top-class defenders in as well since that night.
Sorry, say again?
Some top-class defenders in since that night.
Oh, yeah, I heard. Yeah, yeah, that's the word on the street anyway, Marie.
Only 103 caps. It's freakish.
Yeah, yeah. I think, obviously, I took a little break after my 100 cap and I'm back in now. And it kind of felt like I never left either. And I think you don't really look at that when you're still playing. You probably just look forward to the next game, and every game just means as much as the first game. And obviously, to qualify for a major tournament would be a dream come true.
You mentioned at the top of the interview that women's football is in a good place, and I think I agree with you. It's definitely moving in the right direction anyway, and initiative like Aviva's Soccer Sisters, which you launched today, the midterm virtual skills hub, all those things help on you.
Oh yeah, definitely, and I think it's something that I would have loved to do when I was younger, when I was growing up. Just girls that maybe aren't even involved in football get that opportunity to get a love for the game, and like meet new people, have fun while doing it, and then eventually go on to play football and maybe live their dreams of playing football for Ireland one day.
And before we finish up, Anya, any concerns about COVID? Because obviously you're going to be travelling next week, and we've seen how problematic that can be for international teams, for all teams really.
Yeah, I think so. I think even when you see obviously a cause havoc last week with the Irish team, you see people like Cristiano and like Ronaldo testing positive, so no one's immune from this virus. And obviously I think it's just up to us to put our trust in the medical staff and the HSC and the FAI, just with the protocols in place, and then it's up to us as individuals to just abide by the rules and do the best we can just to stay safe.
Anya, have you been extra careful at the moment, even just with family life?
Yeah, I think so. I think obviously just abiding by the rules and what the HSE are giving out there all the time, and obviously we're going to get tested now tomorrow before we go, so you're looking just to give yourself the best chance of and everyone, and hopefully there'll be no upheaval next week in camp.
Well, look, we wish you the best of luck anyway. It is exciting. You're edging closer to that major tournament, and hopefully it'll be this time round, because we certainly need something to look forward to. Anya Gorman, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. And just before we go, so anybody that is interested in the Soccer Sisters Midterm Virtual Skills Hub, if you go to aviva.ie/soccersisters.
Game on 2FM.